In this hour of the program, it is Pentagon Solutions, where we take a look at the issues the Pentagon is dealing with and the challenges that the agency has in dealing with them and potential solutions for those challenges. My colleague Jason Miller joins me to start our Pentagon Solutions program today. Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno talking about a variety of issues at the Pentagon today. Jason covering that and joins me now to talk about it. Good to see you as always.
I don't think I've ever been on Pentagon Solutions before.
Well, you've never had a solution for Pentagon issues before, but you do today thanks to the comments of General Odierno. What are some of the themes he stressed today?
I think there's two things that really stood out to me. Number one is the idea of they're really going forward with letting women assume certain roles in combat brigades, combat platoons, organizations. They're not quite ready to put them on the front lines, let's be clear on that, but they are going to start to go down a path where they're going to, about 200 women are going to be reporting to what they call maneuver battalions, which have basic direct ground combat roles. They're revising about 6 military occupational specialties, about 13,000 positions where women were previously not allowed to take part in. The general said that women make up about 16% of the force. This will open up a whole new host of possibilities for them. And then over time, they're going to set up the steps forward to doing this. Now, the other thing that stood out is there's a couple questions about sequestration, which you'll play a little bit later. And they said, if sequestration takes place, now, I'll personally tell you, I don't think it's going to happen, but obviously there's some plans, some discussion, a lot of concern going on about it, that if that happens, the Army will need to cut between 80 and 100,000 soldiers in that time, which is a much quicker drawdown than they expected, and that's going to have that snowball effect across the board.
The whole issue with sequestration has been the military spent X amount of time developing the strategy that was introduced in December, all the way back to Secretary Gates's tenure at the Pentagon, and the reason that people say sequestration potentially could be so detrimental is that the strategy was developed understanding that budget cuts would be coming, but not counting on the severe budget cuts through sequestration. I'm personally am with you. I'm not confident that sequestration will happen, and that will be good news for a lot of people across Washington and around the country. But I continue to be surprised at the language. You'll hear it later this hour from General Odierno, that we're not really looking at that yet, and we're now getting to be. My backward math is not so hot, but seven months. Away from January 2nd, 2013, when sequestration hits.
I mean, what the Army is thinking about is saying, listen, we're going to have some natural attrition. We want to have a smaller force, more agile force. And he's saying, listen, we think we can meet our reduction goals, 60 to 75% of our reduction goals through natural attrition. People, you know, just their tours are up, they're done. Or people retire after 20, 25, 30 years in the service. But he says with sequestration, that natural attrition rate won't be enough because we'll have to have a much higher rate of people leaving. And that's when other ways we'll have to force people out in different ways. And that's never pleasant. So I think that that's why part of the reason why they keep hammering this home. So Congress make sure Congress understands what they would be facing if this occurs. Now, I think there's also some political games being played between the military chiefs, even though it's supposed to be apolitical, but they do work for the administration and Congress and the White House. They're all kind of saying, you know, if you let this happen, here's the big problem that you're going to face. Now, do we really know that's going to be the big problem? It's really hard to say.
I have started to hear, though, voices who have been talking about this whole issue for a long time. People who have been saying, you know, this doesn't have to be this way. We can do all of the things that we want to do. We can do it for considerably less money than we're spending. And a lot of the savings can be realized in weapon systems, not people. And yet we can still have the hardware that we need to be able to fight the wars that we potentially will have to fight. I'm hearing those voices from those people getting louder, and I'm hearing more people talking about those issues, people who weren't necessarily on that side before. Is any of that being reflected in what General Odierno is talking about, or is he still talking about hewing pretty closely to where the money is now?
The budget came up, and he said, listen, the budget we submitted for the 2013 budget is the budget we want to go off of. We believe that that's our best chance to do the things we need to do, save money. For instance, one of the things that came up was force size and how big of a force they could have. And right now, under the National Defense Authorization Bill that's going through Congress, Congress wants to have a force reduction to 552,000 active and reserve, and by the end of 2013. Now, what the Army thinks is appropriate is 543,000 active and reserve by the end of 2013. And you think, okay, it's only 9,000 more people, but when you add pay and benefits and all that, that's a ton of money where they don't feel like they can afford right now.
Mm-hmm.
The other piece that's coming through, I think, as related to the Defense Authorization Bill, is there's several provisions in the bill that authorizes money for programs that the White House, the Secretary of the Army, Secretary of Defense, say we don't want anymore. And I think that's another sequestration slash debate over spending that's coming up and that will continue, especially this week, as they debate the Defense Authorization Bill. It's very interesting. Why did Odinero have this press conference? What was the news? Well, the female bit about female soldiers is interesting, but there was really a lot of news from this. I think it's just the Army and then, you know, his case, the general hammering home their position as the defense bill gets debated this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. And my sense was, as you and I discussed this in the newsroom before we went on the air, that this was what we used to call a turf staking press conference in Washington, where just another opportunity for everybody to be very clear about where a particular individual or organization or administration stands on a particular issue as other people are talking about it in some other part of town.
And they also know, for instance, that they'll get press because it's the chief of staff of the Army. It's a very important person. He's going to have, you know, what he says matters. And same thing if the Navy would do it, same thing if the Air Force would do it, the Marines would do it. So very, very interesting. I'll tell you, that definitely the questions were all over the board. They even came up around retirement and benefits. And one of the things they asked him about was, you know, there's any way to change retirement benefits. And he goes, listen, this is a very complex question. We don't want to reduce benefits, but since 2000, the benefits have doubled in terms of the cost until today. If that continues, we just can't afford end strength either. So they say, well, something's got to give. And what they will hope to do is reduce the rate of increase for the benefits, but he didn't give much details about how they're going to do that. So I think that it's all part of this discussion about the Defense Authorization Bill.
Well, there's Secretary Gates' famous quote about healthcare costs eating the military alive, and I think it's fair. I can't think of an observer who follows these things who knows what he or she's talking about who wouldn't go along with the idea that you could very well make the case that that applies to the whole compensation, pay, and benefits spectrum for both current and retired military personnel, that those costs are escalating so rapidly that it's almost hard to project them out over the foreseeable future.
And with the drawdown, both in Iraq has done, obviously, in Afghanistan, that's coming, you're going to have more people that are out of the service. So that's going to put another pressure on the Veterans Affairs Department. So what's going to happen there in terms of their costs? Outweigh, you know, they're going to have such a huge increase in other costs. So it's not only the DOD costs, but now it's VA's costs that you're going to see it. And then you'll see kind of a snowball effect to other agencies in a smaller way. But still, you know, as veterans apply for educational loans, for instance, well, there's a piece there, or small business loans. Well, SBA has a role there. Or the hiring, you know, OPM could see kind of this big push to hire veterans. And they already have a big push, but that could get backed up as well because you just don't have the people to process the applications, the paper, whatever it is.
All the contracting organizations that will be managing a lot more small business veteran-owned contractors. And there's so many layers of complexity to be added through this. Thank you very much for the update. Federal News Radio's Jason Miller covering General Ray Odierno's news conference today. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
More from we'll start with General Odierno's remarks, as Jason mentioned, about women in combat, a couple other issues, when Pentagon Solutions continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKsystems.com.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Are you prepared to detect, stop, or respond to a terror attack? Counterterror Expo US is coming to the Convention Center May 16th and 17th. Hear insights and workable solutions from expert security, defense, and law enforcement speakers. Collaborate across all sectors on critical issues. Explore and test the latest technology on the free expo floor. Don't miss the opportunity to network with the counterterror community at the most relevant counterterror event of the year. Get more information at counterterrorus.com. That's counterterrorus.com.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and or complex and or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
I'm Emily Kopp, coming up on tomorrow's Federal Drive. It's been delayed, but NASA says the first commercial spaceflight will lift off this week. We'll speak with Deputy Administrator Lori Garver. And a new survey shows you don't have to wait quite so long for a security clearance. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today it's Pentagon Solutions, listening to Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno speaking at the Pentagon today. Among the issues he touched on, women in combat, and the Department of Defense says Army leaders are asking today whether and how to open infantry and armor ranks to women. The service's senior soldier says officers in charge of training and force development are now gathering data to help answer those questions. Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno told reporters during a Pentagon briefing, in line with Defense Secretary Leon Panetta's policy, the service has already opened 13,000 previously all-male positions to female soldiers, the general noted. Those were some of the remarks that General Odierno made during his remarks today, and we'll hear the comments that he made to reporters to start this as our first highlight on Pentagon Solutions.
I really just want to start off first by reminding everybody that today the United States Army remains committed and engaged around the globe. We have 92,000 soldiers currently deployed in support of operations. 68,000 of those are in Afghanistan. As you know, the President and the Secretary of Defense provided new defense strategic guidance to focus our efforts in the beginning of the year. The guidance was clear, very collaborative process. We've been through that. More than 10 years of fighting two large-scale operations, the Army clearly now is moving inside a frame of transition over the next 5, 6, 7 years. It's important to me that we continue to apply the lessons of more than 10 years of continuous combat. We will be leaner. We'll be more agile Army that is an adaptive, innovative, versatile, and ready component of the joint force. Our charter will remain to be the best manned, best equipped, best trained, and best led land force in the world to be decisive for a broad range of missions. In today's increasingly uncertain and complex strategic environment, we must ensure that we sustain a diverse mix of rapidly deployable capabilities, adapt processes to reflect broader range of requirements, and provide scalable options to our national security decision makers. And through the changes ahead, we will demonstrate unwavering commitment to the honor of our profession and our values. To guide us through this dynamic landscape underpinned by global fiscal challenges, the Secretary of the Army has espoused our vision as the Army is globally engaged and regionally responsive, is an indispensable partner and provider of a full range of capabilities to combatant commanders in a joint, interagency, intergovernmental, and multinational environment. As part of the joint force and as America's Army in all that we offer, we guarantee the agility, versatility, and depth to prevent, shape, and win in the future. Acknowledging the changing geopolitical environment, the DoD strategic guidance articulates priorities for our 21st century defense that sustains U.S. global leadership. The Army has a vital role in these priorities, and we are developing several initiatives to support the new strategy, and I'd like to quickly share a few of those with you. First, our Army force generation process has served us well in meeting our demands over the last several years in Iraq and Afghanistan. But with operations in Iraq complete and ongoing transition in Afghanistan, we will have the opportunity to adapt this process to be more wide-ranging, especially as we rebalance toward the Asia-Pacific region. As such, we will implement a progressive readiness model for both the active and reserve components to be more responsive to all of our combatant commanders. In support of the combatant commanders, we'll be implementing a regionally aligned force concept beginning next year to better meet some theater requirements. The intent is to focus unit or headquarters during its training cycle on specific mission profiles and unique environmental characteristics that make them available to the combatant commander for employment in their area of responsibility. We'll conduct a pilot next year when a brigade combat team from the 10th Mountain Division will be the first unit to execute this concept in coordination with U.S. Africa Command. The regionally aligned forces concept will be especially important in the Asia-Pacific region as we move forward, home to 7 of the 10 largest armies, and this will follow in more enduring ways over the next several years. For enduring commitments in some of the theaters, we plan to employ rotational units. Europe comes to mind as we reduce two forward station brigade combat teams over the next 2 years. We will leverage pre-positioned equipment sets and multilateral training exercises to allow us to promote regional security and enhance capacity and interoperability and sustain our relationships with our NATO and other allies in Europe. Finally, as the Army's end strength reduces over the next 5 years, it is important to note that this leaner Army will be vastly more capable than our pre-9/11 Army. Besides 10 years of hard-earned combat experience in our ranks, we continue to increase our Special Operations Force capacity. We have significantly increased our ability to conduct intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. We've increased our aviation assets to support worldwide missions and responsiveness around the world. We continue to increase our cyber capability as we move forward, and we continue to look at other capabilities in order to move forward. We are also reviewing and refining our organizational design, mission command, and training methods to institutionalize the lessons learned in combat. All in all, I believe these are the right investments to posture the Army to meet our strategy and will serve our nation well in the future. In addition to these initiatives, we will continue to reinforce standards, discipline, fitness, and accountability. Rightfully so, the military is held to the highest standard since it's entrusted with special responsibilities by the American people. Trust and respect are paramount. Standards and discipline are fundamental, and I will never pass up an opportunity to talk to our soldiers and our leaders about the sacred trust and our commitment to moral and ethical behavior and values. Secretary McHugh most recently announced that we will be standing up the 7th Infantry Division headquarters at Joint Base Lewis-McChord, Washington, to focus on the training, mentorship, and discipline to five of the brigades stationed there, similar to our other large bases with Corps headquarters, such as Fort Hood and Fort Bragg. As you may have heard, Major General Steve Lanza will assume command of the 7th Infantry Division to provide requisite division-level training, readiness, and administration oversight that promotes standards, discipline, esprit de corps, and excellence. On another important note, last week we concluded our annual Sexual Harassment and Assault Response Prevention Summit with our Army senior leaders. We discussed efforts to get after curbing sexual assault and sexual harassment in our ranks, something that is absolutely intolerable and inconsistent with our Army values. It is something that I've charged commanders at all levels to stay focused on, to take care of and protect each other. That's what we do, and that's who we are, and we cannot expect anything less. As many of you know, earlier this week, more than 200 women began reporting to the maneuver battalions in 9 of our brigade combat teams. Selected to participate in the exception to the direct ground combat assignment rule. Additionally, co-location as an assignment restriction is rescinded. This revision will result in the opening of 6 military occupational specialties and 80 units, more than 13,000 positions to women, opening up new opportunities to our female soldiers, which make up about 16% of our force, and allows us to leverage the tremendous talent resident in our ranks. As I have testified over the last several months, it's important for the Army to execute the fiscal year 13 budget as planned. It reflects our highest priorities of the Army in support of the new defense strategic guidance and allows the Army to meet contingency requirements, take care of soldiers and families, and achieve balance between end strength, readiness, and modernization. Our approach to the current and future budget cycles will remain strategy-based and fiscally prudent.
That is Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno, the remarks at a news conference today at the Pentagon. You can read more about it later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we're working to get the video of the news conference put on the in-depth page, too. Some of the questions from members of the media for General Odierno and Pentagon Solutions continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
Germany may become one of the first nations to integrate Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 onto its naval vessels, according to the German Chief of Naval Operations, Axel Schimpf, though the German government has not made a decision on whether to adapt its fleet of frigates for ballistic missile defense. The enhancements would allow Germany to participate in the Obama administration's European-phased adaptive approach, embraced by NATO. Depending on the political decision and funding, the German Navy stands ready to provide sea-based capabilities, Schimpf said.
5 million hours of experience, 20 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community. We're more than just great life insurance for the military family. We're your guide through life's challenges by offering the right products at the right time for the best price. Our Survivor Assistance Services team provides compassionate and caring advice and assistance for your family at a most critical time. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what's best for you. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war or aviation clauses. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com. That's AAFMA. MAA.com.
Join the United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation for GeoInt Community Week, June 4th through 8th, featuring classified and unclassified workshops, demonstrations, exhibits, briefings, and networking opportunities. USGIF's GeoInt Community Week is a great opportunity to learn more about the GeoInt issues affecting the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities. Register and learn more at usgif.org. The United States Geospatial Intelligence Foundation, where our national security begins.
Getting real about fitness. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicola Scarlo with HHS HealthBeat. Age is no excuse. Young or old, we should all be physically active. For adults, that means 30 minutes of activity a day, 5 days a week. For kids, that means 60 minutes of activity a day, 5 days a week. You can also count your steps using a pedometer. Experts say adults should walk 8,500 steps a day. Kids should walk around 1,200 steps a day. Shelley Full is executive director of the President's Council on Fitness, Sports, and Nutrition.
Just because we're aging does not mean that we are going to get heart disease. It does not mean that diabetes is in our future. We have got to take care of ourselves now.
Being active reduces your risk for heart disease, certain cancers, stroke, osteoporosis, and diabetes. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
For those dedicated to outstanding public service, meeting the expectations of the American people in an increasingly complex world is a challenge. But with smart programs, people, and performance management, government employees are the epicenter of positive change. The Performance Institute presents the 12th Annual Government Performance Summit, June 18th through 20th at the Marriott at Metro Center. Learn how to create the future for government leadership, measurement, and a motivated workforce. Space is limited. Register now at governmentperformance.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno in the Pentagon briefing room today, and you're hearing his comments on Pentagon solutions. In this highlight, he begins taking some questions from members of the media who are there to hear what he has to say.
General Logan Alger with AP. One quick question and then a broader one. You mentioned the women who are just starting with this. It's not a pilot program, but I understand that there had been some discussion or some initial discussion about Rangers. Can you talk a little bit about what that's...
This is a progressive way forward. So first, what we're doing is we're doing in nine brigade combat teams, we're opening up the occupational specialties that currently women serve in down to infantry and armor battalions. And we will run this for several months. And my guess is, based on my experience in Iraq and what I've seen in Afghanistan, we'll then move forward with a more permanent solution inside of the Army probably sometime this fall. The next step is we have to continue to attempt to look at do we open up infantry and armor MOSs to females? And that's the next step. So what we've done is we're really now in collecting information and we're setting a course forward on how we might take a look at this. And so that's what I've asked General Bob Cohn, the training and doctrine commander, and Major General Bob Brown, the commander of the Maneuver Center, to start taking a look at this and provide us recommendations how we might move forward. There's been no decisions made. What we want to do is bring information up to the Secretary and I so we can take a look at it and decide the way forward on how we want to progress and potentially opening up these positions.
Does that depend on how you see things go over the next several months with what's happening now, or is that independent?
I think it's not based. We're not going to wait. I've asked them to start looking at it now, and then we'll chart a course of action as we way forward. And I suspect something like that will probably come out sometime this summer.
David,
Will this include a plan to send women through the Marine Corps equivalent of their infantry officer school?
No, I mean we have our own schools. We'll take a look at it. I mean, that's what the recommendations will come forward. Are we going to do something like that? And that's part of what the recommendations are. And we'll make some announcement on that later as we have a chance to look at it.
The House Authorization Bill heads to the floor today. I wonder if you could comment on a couple items. One, there's language in there that limits the pace of the downsizing of the force, and the argument is that somehow alleviates an unwanted pace. And can you give a reaction to how you manage that?
Well, I submitted the budget for the pace that I thought was the most appropriate pace for us to downsize. I have two concerns. One is the language, the last time I saw it, caps us at 552,000 through 13. And right now, that will hinder us because we were planning on being at about 543,000 by the end of 13. So what does that mean? Well, that means we will not be able to use attrition necessarily. This might cause us to force more people out of the Army than we want instead of using natural attrition over the 5 or 6 year period that we've identified over the last two budget submissions. So I've talked with the House. I've told them that I don't agree with those amendments. I'd like to see them adjusted, but we'll continue to work with them as we move forward. I think we'll be able to come to an agreement, and we'll work with them very hard to come with what is the right pace of reductions. I think what we submitted was the right pace. It enables me to do three things. It enables me to take care of our soldiers and families. It enables me to continue to meet our commitments in Afghanistan, and it continues, if necessary, it gives us enough leeway. If something occurs, we could reverse it if necessary. And I think all of those factors can be met in what we submitted in the budget.
The second thing I wanted to say was the Secretary Panetta said that the way that they put some money back into some hardware items is going to take away from military personnel or other items. Have you identified an example?
Well, I would say for us in the budget, the real issue is the end strength number. So if we have to keep a higher end strength number, that means we start to lose our balance between what I call the three rheostats, which is end strength, readiness, and modernization. And if those start getting out of balance, we have to be careful. What we don't want is a hollow force. I want one as the best trained, best equipped, and ready Army if asked to deploy. And I worry that could impact that if we don't do this right.
Hi, Elizabeth Fubelak from the New York Times. Can I just follow up on Lita's question? Yeah. I'm just a little unclear on your answer on the Ranger question.
Yeah.
What did you say? That you're looking at this? You mean Lita asked, what is the chance of women being able to take Ranger training?
Well, I think we're taking a look at it. And I think, I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Right.
Okay, so... Let me give you some statistics, okay? So as we look at our senior infantry officers, about 90% of our senior infantry officers are Ranger qualified. So if we determine that we're going to allow women to go into infantry and be successful, they are probably at some time going to have to go through Ranger school. We have not made that decision yet, but it's a factor that I've asked them to take a look at. And again, to come back to us as we look at this problem, we have to look at the all-encompassing problem that we have in terms of if we decide to do this, we want the women to be successful. And how do we make them most successful? And that's what we've asked them to do, to gather data, come back to us so the Secretary and I can chart a way forward.
MOS is they're going to be going into?
I think it's signal. It's, in other words, they're already in these MOS, but they're now being able to go into infantry battalion, much lower level. So it's signal, it's adjutant general, it's MI, it's medical MOSs. What's that? MLRS, which is a MOS. Those are the ones.
That's Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno speaking in the Pentagon briefing room today. You're hearing him on Pentagon Solutions on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More from General Odierno's news conference when Pentagon Solutions continues. And later this afternoon, you can see the entire event posted online at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. More in a moment on Federal News Radio.
Here's Margie Graves, Deputy CIO DHS, on the Federal Executive Forum on Virtualization, sponsored by DLT Quest.
We have to solve the security issue, but once we get there, we're going to see a lot more teaming between hardware, software, and service provider vendors so that there are unified solutions brought to the federal government for our use in procurement.
Listen to the whole program made possible by Trezor Media Group. Log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Quest Software IT Management Solutions help you lower costs,
manage risk, extend platform capability and lifecycle, and reduce the complexity of IT management. They make your mission possible, physical, virtual, and in the cloud. Quest Software is simplicity at work, and it's available through DLT Solutions. Simplify. Thrive. Quest Software. Learn more at dlt.com/mission possible. That's dlt.com/mission possible.
From curbing the AIDS epidemic in children to capturing the world's most notorious arms trafficker, federal employees accomplished some amazing feats in 2011. Now, 33 feds are being honored for their work. They've been named Service to America Medal finalists. Federal News Radio interviews each of the nominees in our Service to America Medals Tracker Series. Find out what makes them tick and what interesting work they are focusing on next at federalnewsradio.com. Search for Service to America.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
To hear Senator Chuck Grassley tell it, the IRS has complaints from thousands of corporate whistleblowers, and yet he says the IRS is slow to jump on this.
When they know that there's money that hasn't been paid, they collect it, and then the collection of it, you know that there's an award to be made, make the award. And it takes two people to decide to make the award. You got to have the IRS commissioner sitting down with the Secretary of Treasury, and it ought to be a pro forma decision.
FederalNewsRadio.com/Federal. Drive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, listening to comments from General Ray Odierno, the Army Chief of Staff, speaking in the Pentagon conference room today. And my colleague Jason Miller covering this event, he talked to me at the beginning of this hour about sequestration, and that's where the questions go in this portion of the questions for General Odierno.
Sir, could you tell us, beyond the current budget, if sequestration follows through, what kind of cuts do you anticipate to end strength and modernization? How will that affect the Army? What are you doing to prepare
for? There's two points of sequestration. One is my estimates are it would cause us to cut another 80 to 100,000 in end strength, but it would be a combination of reserve component and active component end strength. But what even makes sequestration worse is we have no say in where the cuts come. It is directed across every element of our budget, and it's a certain percentage. So what that would cause us to do is increase the pace of our end strength reductions. It would cause a hollowness, significant hollowness in the force. It would probably cause us to breach many contracts that we already have in place because we would not meet the current requirements that we have on our developmental contracts. So it would affect every asset that we have in every area. So that's the concern. And fundamentally, I think all the Joint Chiefs have come to the conclusion that we fundamentally have to relook our whole strategy if it occurs. And those are the concerns that we have.
Thank you. Quick clarification. These regionally aligned brigades,
yeah.
are those specialized units that
no.
you have alluded to? And what are those? Give us a sense.
So what we've done in the past, so we go through a generation process where we put brigades, we put all different aviation engineer forces, and we prepare them to go to Afghanistan or Iraq. Okay. So what we're changing is they will now be aligned to a combatant commander. So as they go through a training process, then they become available for a period of time, 9 to 12 months, and they'll be aligned with SOCOM, with CENTCOM, with PACOM, based on their requirements. And then they can use those forces to meet whatever requirements they might have. It might be rotational forces. It could be building partner capacity. It could be providing security assistance. It could be doing exercises. And what this does for us, it enables us to focus those units in these areas so they become more understanding of the tasks that they'll have to work. So what we're doing is we're meeting combatant commanders' requirements by aligning Army forces so they can use them in the future, plan on them, which helps them to shape the environment that they're operating in. And that's the thought process behind it.
Additional specialized units for security forces?
We're using the forces that we'll have, and they will adapt and adjust in order to meet whatever requirements that combatant commander will have.
So everybody will remain full spectrum capable?
No, that's not what I said. Okay, what I said was We will have units that will train to certain levels, and then as they get requirements from combatant commanders, they will train and be capable of conducting operations in those areas of for that specific combatant commander. So give me an example. So we might have a unit that says they're going to do, in AFRICOM, we want them to do small unit training. Now, they will reach a certain level of capability, combined arms training. And then we'll use them to help train and assist units in other nations in Africa in order to continue to build partner capacity. You know, the bottom line is, if you want to train units to be more capable in their specialties, you want units that are capable in their specialties. So we want infantrymen training infantrymen, armor officer training armor. And so you want that capability within each individual in order to be able to train that. And you want unit capacity in order to train that, so we'll align them as such. And we'll continue to train to a certain combined arms level as we move forward.
General, just a follow-up on the AFRICOM thing. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about how this is going to work? I mean, as we all know, a lot of the special operations forces could be doing a lot of this training in, you know, Somalia, Yemen, et cetera, and other places. Will the Army be working with special operators? Is this now, in AFRICOM, going to be more of an Army job?
It's both. I mean, there are some missions. There are many things that go on. You really need to probably, it's better to talk with General Hamm, and he can give you a better feel for exactly how he's going to use them. But there's a mission for both conventional and special operations forces. There'll be some cases where conventional forces are supporting special operations forces. You know, we've built these strong relationships in both Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 7, 8, 9 years, and we'll continue to utilize that. We had talks with Special Operations Command about 2 months ago to discuss this very issue. So we will carry this on in all of the combatant commander's areas. But in addition to that, you have some additional requirements that require conventional units to assist, build capacity, do exercises, and other things. So it'll be a combination of both of those things.
And how many
are we? Well, again, we'll develop this over time. So what I expect is, you know, each combatant command will come in with their own requirements, and once they do that, we will then start aligning forces. Now, we're just going to do some – in 13, we can only do a couple because we're still so much engaged in Afghanistan. But starting in 14, you'll see many more Army units starting to be aligned to other combatant commands, and that will be specifically determined on their requirements. We had a meeting in the Joint Staff had a meeting a couple weeks ago that outlined these requirements that are coming in from the combatant command. So we'll take that, and then we'll align our forces appropriately to meet the requirements.
How many for the AFRICOM initially?
Initially one brigade combat team. And it's kind of a pilot or a test on how we're going to do this.
We have time for one more question.
Do you anticipate one brigade per region or several brigades?
I think in some regions it might be one, and some it could be 4, 5, or 6. It depends on the requirements.
You can take a more.
Just for clarification on the earlier point you made about 80,000 to 100,000 troops cuts because of sequestration.
Yeah.
Is that over and above the existing
cuts
that are already planned?
Yes.
So does that mean that you're doing some water drills to try and understand how the sequestration will affect the military services?
No. I'm trying to understand
how you came up with that.
Because
number.
It is a percentage cut, so it's very easy to understand. In other words, we have no choice in where the cuts come. It's already directed a certain percentage out of every. So we understand in order to meet this, that's the requirement. It'll be somewhere around that. But it depends on the combination of active and reserve forces we decide to use, and that's why the number varies a little bit.
How would you accomplish that if you had to get rid of another 100,000 troops? Would you accelerate some of the processes you plan over the next 4 years with boards and rifts?
Sequestration will require us to do it over the same time period. So, yes, we will have to force, if this happens, we'll have to force many more people out than we are now. We're going to be able to do 65 to 70% of our reductions right now through natural attrition. If we get sequestration, that changes all that, and there'll be many that are forced out.
Thank
And that's why sequestration, in my mind, is disastrous to us. And then it also affects our overall strategy as we move forward.
That's Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno on Pentagon Solutions talking about sequestration. And you can hear more from him on that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. General Odierno's speech will be posted there, the video for you to watch whenever you want later this afternoon. One more highlight from his news conference today at the Pentagon on Pentagon Solutions on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Recently, UnitedHealthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. UnitedHealthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the seven leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune Magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are UnitedHealthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job. It's an honor. UnitedHealthcare.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition, from providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
Are you prepared to detect, stop, or respond to a terror attack? Counterterror Expo U.S. is coming to the Convention Center May 16th and 17th. Hear insights and workable solutions from expert security, defense, and law enforcement speakers. Collaborate across all sectors on critical issues. Explore and test the latest technology on the free expo floor. Don't miss the opportunity to network with the counterterror community at the most relevant counterterror event of the year. Get more information at counterterrorus.com. That's counterterrorus.com.
Adobe Acrobat Pro is actually used very commonly for PDF archiving. If you've got a lot of files of different formats and different types, if you just save these files into all these different formats, then 20 years later somebody wants to look at the file, they'd actually have to have the program that could open up that file. So for digital archiving, you'd rather have a standardized file format.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno in the Pentagon briefing room today, talking about a number of subjects, including sequestration, women in combat, and other issues. And this highlight from the question and answer portion of the news conference today.
Give us a sense, please, about the role of heavy armor in the new defense strategy. How is it changing? As you know, the associated hardware is a topic of contention on the Hill.
Yeah. I mean, I think through our analysis and what we've looked at, we've done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of analysis of what's happened over the last 10 years and what we expect will happen in the future. We've also brought brigade and battalion commanders from all over the Army in, and we determined there is a role for armor. There's a role for armor in counterinsurgency. There's a role for armor in the future, but it'll continue to evolve. So there'll continue to be armor in the force. Will we reduce the amount of armor? Probably. that's as we come forward with the specific force mix. We still need a combination of all those capabilities in our mind as we look to the future.
We're coming up on the third anniversary of Bo Bergdahl being abducted in Afghanistan,
yeah.
And I believe his parents are supposed to come in soon for another update. Who do you meet with them, or when Army leadership meets them?
I met with them last time when they came in, and I talked with them, and if they want to, I will meet with them again.
And can you just sort of give us an update of where you see this search for Bergdahl standing?
I think you need to ask that to CENTCOM. I mean, that's their requirement. I mean, we look at it. There's lots of work. We never give up. There's lots of work being done. There's a lot of analysis continue to be done to try to find where he is. We never stop. I can tell you that much. I do get updates on it, but CENTCOM's responsible for that, so I'd ask you to ask them that question.
As you move forward with the regionally aligned model, what is your plan for rotational or deployment availability versus required dwell time?
Well, 2-to-1 is what we shoot for. And in fact, by the way, for the first time last month, we're finally at a 2-to-1 dwell time ratio. It's the first time we've reached it. And it has to do, obviously, with the reduced requirement in Iraq and the continued reduction in Afghanistan. And we'll have to see. Now, I think we won't have that problem initially because I think there won't be as many rotational forces. But we will have rotational forces, I believe, to support several combatant commands as we continue to develop those requirements. And we'll have continued rotational requirements in CENTCOM. We'll have some in UCOM. We'll have some in PACOM. And we'll continue to work that with the combatant commanders as we move forward.
That's Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odierno in the Pentagon briefing room today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More information on that news conference at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And later this afternoon, we'll post the video of that news conference for you there, too. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming in minutes.